Learn from today's most innovative brands and observe how they empower employees, engage consumers, design products, and co-create experiences together. Welcome to the Brand Lab series from AE Marketing Group.
So hi, everyone. It's Brian Walker. Welcome to the Brand Lab series podcast, where each week we broadcast from 1871 and we explore today's most innovative brands alongside today's most insightful executives and entrepreneurs. This week, we have Technori CEO Scott Catoon on the show. Excited to talk to Scott. And with that said, let's enter the Brand Lab. Hi, Natalie. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
I'm good. Happy Tuesday. I've had a lot of coffee already and we haven't even started the show.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. But I'm excited because, you know, I know we just talked before we started rolling about all the momentum the show continues to get as we're starting early into season two. We're seeing a lot of engagement and downloads with a number of our episodes. We've had some great guests on with Deloitte CMO Jonathan Kapolsky, Russ Klein, the CEO of the AMA. We just had Howard Tolman, a CEO of 1871 on. And I know we talked about this in some of our earliest episodes, but it really is about building momentum. So to see our audience continue to grow on iTunes, on iHeartRadio, on Google Play is super exciting. And I certainly want to thank everybody for listening to the Brand Lab series.
Yeah, thank you for downloading. Thank you for subscribing. It helps so much to see your participation on social media. And if you could just take a moment, hop over onto iTunes and leave us an iTunes review, that would be amazing. So yeah, I agree, Brian. This is an exciting time for the Brand Lab series.
Yeah, and the iTunes review is really important because how we're found in search traffic is really based on iTunes platform by a quick review or a rating on the show, both of which only take about a minute. So we'd super appreciate you doing that.
Absolutely.
And like I said, what's great about Scott is he has a lot of experience in media. He's got a lot of experience in marketing. He's got a lot of experience in branding and the whole entrepreneur ecosystem here in Chicago. And Technori continues to expand. And I'm super excited to hear some of his insight today. So, Scott, welcome on the Brand Lab series.
It's great to be here.
So you wear a ton of hats. You're pretty well known around 1871 in the Chicago ecosystem. But for some of our listeners that don't know you, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I'm the CEO and host of Technori. People know Technori since 2010. Seth Kravitz founded it. It's a startup showcase, and we featured over 300 companies since 2010. They've gone on to raise somewhere around a little north of $260 million in venture funding. Employ 2,500 people roughly, numerous exits and all that sort of stuff. Since taking over in May, we've also launched a show on WGN called Technori Live. It was a podcast similar to this. We've had a lot of success at it. We did about 280,000 plays this last quarter, and we are officially going to be announcing in the next few weeks that the show is also going to be on live radio. So WGN AM 720 on Saturdays at some time. We haven't quite figured out when that's going to be. But somewhere around the noon, 1-2 o'clock area.
Oh, very exciting.
Yep. Breaking news on your podcast. That haven't said that anywhere. I'm actually not sure if I'm allowed to say that yet. Too late now.
Yeah, thank you. Exciting.
So, Scott, take us back to the early days of your broadcast career with Tomorrow's Business Today on WGN Radio. Like, how did you build your audience so quickly?
You know what? This is a funny story, and it's totally ridiculous. It's all built around a lie, like most success stories.
We have more breaking news.
Yeah, I think people might be aware of this one, though. So long story short, I started a company after I graduated from Northwestern called Nequity Partners, and the whole premise was innovation. It was creating innovative products for companies. And coming from Northwestern, the Medill School of Journalism is there, and I got a degree there as well in a co-op with Kellogg. And so... For whatever reason, I right off the bat like skipped media. I went into like every complicated manufacturing, like difficult, don't belong here area that I could do. And I just like for whatever reason just ignored media, even though I knew it was totally disruptible. And so I guess like a year into the process of running the company, WGN and a few other media companies had reached out and said, hey, you know, your name was associated with a couple of projects with Kraft and Google from college. And we were curious if you could help us build a brand or a thing for millennials to stick around. They come on our site, they come to WGNradio.com to listen to the White Sox and the Cubs and the Bulls and the Hawks and Northwestern football. Well, not so much Northwestern football, but the other ones. And how do we get them to stick around? And so I did. I built Tomorrow's Business Today, and it was about entrepreneurship. It was about 1871, and they didn't quite get it. They were putting like plumbers and food truck drivers on the show. And I mean, obviously, no offense to those careers. They're great. But that wasn't the sentiment that I was trying to create. And so they shut it down. And about 6 months later, I get a phone call, and they're like, hey, we'd like to revive it. We think it still has legs. We just got to retool it. And so I said, sure, but here's the deal. I get to host it. I lied and said that I had hosted before and I knew what I was doing. I'd never been on a show before, I'd never hosted anything in my life. It was total smoke and mirrors. And I just thought, all right, well, how do I make people believe that this is real? So I went through my Rolodex and I found the biggest names that I knew. And I called them up and I said, hey, I'm launching a show on WGN. Would you be my first guest? And the first person I knew was George Boosis, who's the founder and CEO of Raise.com. And he has like 66,000 Twitter followers. And the next guy was Jeffrey Hazlett, who's a former CMO of Kodak. And he runs C-Suite on Bloomberg. And I called him and I said, do you want to be on my show? And he said, yes. And he's got hundreds of thousands of followers. I mean, he posts something on LinkedIn and it gets hit, you know, like a million times. And the third one, it was a guy who I just, you know, really liked what they were doing. And I thought it'd be unique. Sage Vertical Gardens, just Chicago-based. Brad Keywall invested in company. And they don't have a huge following, but I just thought it was really cool and be something clicky people would like. So I brought them on and I was so foolish. I didn't have any of the prep, Brian, that you have here. Like I just walked on and was like, all right, how do you hit record? Walked in the studio, hit record. I've got Jeff Hazlett calling in. I'm wearing my cowboy boots. So I thought, well, he's a cowboy. I just started talking about cowboys and that was it. And then the next one was George and the next one was Sage. We pushed them out and we had like 7,000 plays in that very first one because George pushed it out. And next thing you know, we of course went from like a ton of people to like seven, my parents and a couple of friends who were willing to listen to it. And I just kept posting on social media and kept going and going and going. And the long story short on it was you had to find a frequency. When you say you're going to launch a show, it can't be like on your own convenience. It's got to be like, we have a show, we post it every Tuesday from 11 to 12:30. We're at WGN recording. We record sometimes five episodes in that hour and a half. I push out five episodes succinctly Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then if we have the live show, we'll go Saturday and push it out Saturday. You've got to create a track record and a frequency and a thing for people to jump on and be like, every Tuesday, I know that Technori is coming up. And then, of course, you got to get great guests. I guess I had a natural ability to make people conversate in a way that was entertaining. I mean, we got that to like 500,000 plays before I ran into Seth Kravitz, who at the time was still running Technori. And I told him I was a huge fan. I went to a bunch of Technori events when I was in grad school. And I don't know why. I just felt like he was looking to move on to something else. And I had this crazy idea that if I wanted to make a go at Tomorrow's Business Today instead of the consulting company I was doing, that I had to make a move. I couldn't, you know, there was really a million events in town. So I got to figure out how to grab and go. And I talked to Seth. We worked out a deal. Acquired Technori, merged it with Tomorrow's Business Today, retooled it and called it Technori Live. And fast forward 6-7 months and we're about to have a show that was a podcast out of my brain that's now on live AM radio.
That's awesome. So for someone who supposedly skipped over media, you're creating quite the little media empire. So that's awesome. And you know, it's funny, we had Howard Tolman on last week and we were joking about the whole fake it till you make it, but it sounds like you're actually a success of the fake it till you make it. And it's curious because I knew that this thing was like a giant snowball for you back to the GN side. And I know one of the things that I think can get hard when you're trying to build out a show like this or others is that consistency. You know, it's great that you knocked a few home runs right out of the gate, but I was curious to hear how you got and kept that momentum. But it sounds like it was all about grinding it out and that consistency.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you were one of the guests on Tomorrow's Business Today, and you're going to certainly be a guest on Technori Live. You know, here's the thing. I skipped over media. I say this to lots of people. It's becoming almost a joke at this point, as bad as my inability to pronounce names.
I share that problem, actually.
I, I give up. I let people introduce themselves on my show now, because if the name is anything like longer than Wagner and Smith, I'm out. But, you know, a lot of hard work goes into looking this unprepared. Like, and that sounds goofy to people, but it literally describes me. A lot of, it's like I skipped over media, but that didn't mean that I didn't go back and learn. So like while I was doing this, and I'm still learning, but while I started doing this, I had no idea what a monetization model looks like for a podcast. No idea. I'm starting to learn. I had no idea, you know, nuances of being a media person, what you say, what you don't say. How do you get people to speak? You know, coincidentally, people would say things to me during the show, and I'd be like, wow, that was a great moment. And I'd go back and listen and try to figure, like, how did I walk them into that corner where they admitted something that they probably weren't going to talk about? So you have to go back. You know, I'm sure Howard talked about this, and I definitely shouldn't be the person who follows up Howard Tolman, but he could tell you, if you know, you're not going to know everything at any time. So you got to go back and be willing to learn all of the things as they come along. And that's been the process.
And that's kind of, so we've done, I don't know, Natalie, almost 40 of these, over the last year, not at your frequency, but almost weekly. And, yeah, we continue to kind of learn as we go, for sure.
Oh yeah. I've listened to a bunch of yours before I came on this, and they get better and better each time. And, you know, it comes down to the guests, and sometimes that's where the skill and the practice comes in, because you get a crappy guest and they're just like, and then I did this, and then you're just like, all right, let's help you here. Take some time.
So Technori is the largest startup showcase in the Midwest and had been around for many years before you. What motivated you to get involved and want to take it to the next level?
So Technori, having been around since 2010, had an original mission. When Seth started it, there wasn't 1871. There wasn't the ecosystem there is today. And he did an unbelievable job fostering a community around this. And I really do think that Technori had a lot to do with all these incubators you see popping up. Almost every one of the people who was the head of them was on stage at Technori under the name of another startup at one point or another. Bill Finnup is an example. Emil Cambry is another example. So, you know, when I looked at it, I was doing a show called Tomorrow's Business Today. And what I was stumbling upon was the innovation conversation was starting to get more sophisticated. The companies that we were looking at had access to some capital. They had access to attention and all kinds of different things that Seth had enabled. What they didn't have was access to the coast so much. What they didn't have was access to large organizations who are creating venture arms and sort of merging their venture arm with their R&D and sort of getting involved. And they weren't really getting involved, and they weren't even here at 1871 yet, for the most part. There was a few here, G Ventures and a few, but not a lot of them. And the other thing I noticed was there was a lot of movement and hunger for female founders and for minority founders to get involved. And the only places they could go were like off on their own. You know, it's like, this is this one hub that's for women, and there's a one hub for minorities. This is where they go. And I thought, we're so close. Chicago has two of the best universities in the world. We have the most Fortune 500 and 1,000 companies within a square, you know, mileage in the world. You know, not at the time, but we could be the most, not the highest number of exits, but the highest number volume-wise of million-plus-dollar exits in the country. And I recognized that we were missing one thing, and it had to be tied together, and people had to know about us outside of here. So what my attraction ended up being was, I can connect Technori's ecosystem with large organizations that I already knew from my previous part and from my interviewing them on Tomorrow's Business Today. And I knew that I was a person who could make contacts in West Coast and East Coast, which we've done. I mean, we've partnered with Republic in New York, which is the equity crowdfunding platform. We meet with venture firms out there all the time now. I just met with one yesterday when they flew into Chicago. Our keynote for this month's event on Tuesday, the 31st, is Shahroz Shanari, who is the founder of Women 2.0 in San Francisco. Two companies coming on stage, flying in from Palo Alto. That whole thing was about bringing the coasts here to Chicago. Stop making this a flyby. This is the next evolution of Technori in Chicago, which is to make us a real power. Not like they're the third fastest, which to me is an insult. It's like, no, we're the one in the middle. If it works in Chicago, it works anywhere in the country. And so I'm trying to introduce that to everybody. And then on the female founder minority front, We've made a pledge and we've hit it every month, this month included, that half the stage is represented by females because that's half our population. And a third of the stage is represented by minorities because that's half our population. We're going to hit that again this month. And I don't make fanfare about it. I mentioned it here, but I don't make fanfare about it because I think that it should be something that we just expect. And so why and all those things, I guess, for Technori, that was why. It was, how do we stop focusing so much on building in our little echo chamber, as you've heard a lot about during the election? How do we stop talking locally and start talking nationally and even globally? We had dinner with one of the delegates from Iran, one of the delegates from China, to bring Chicago to the forefront, because we've got a very diverse and unique offering that I think the coasts don't have.
So you're listening to Scott Catoon, CEO of Technori, on this week's Brand Lab Series podcast. Scott, another thing that is really exciting about the change of Technori is the equity crowdfunding component. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about that?
Yes, I'm really excited about this. And tonight's showcase is going to be one of a kind. There's been a lot of stories in the Chicago Tribune in the last few weeks and months. Fortunately, they've asked me a few times. Some of the stories are good, some aren't. Equity crowdfunding, for those who don't know, the Title III of the Jobs Act enables anyone to invest in startup companies or small businesses for that matter. Companies in Illinois can raise up to $4 million. Companies nationally, federal, can raise up to $1 million. And it's just like Kickstarter, except instead of getting a t-shirt and a sticker, you get actual equity in a company through the through what they call a crowd safe or a convertible note. And what I like about it, I use as a case study, is Oculus. So when Oculus ran their successful, I think it was Indiegogo campaign, it was a few million bucks, 2.7 million or whatever. The average contribution was 500 bucks. So a few years later, Oculus gets bought by Facebook for like $2 billion. You got your sticker and your original Oculus. Had you been an equity crowdfunding campaign, you'd have gotten about $30,000 check. And that, to me, is what like this represents. And so what we really try to do is, again, to the original point, like how do we expand Chicago nationally? I think that by doing equity crowdfunding, we give first-time founders, minorities and female founders in particular, the ability to sort of revolutionize friends and family. No longer do they have to go to an angel firm and say, give me this, give me that. I don't have a product. The firm takes away, you know, 20% or more of your company. You can go to your network and say, I need $250,000 to build my MVP. You raise it through all your friends and networking through a cool campaign coming on our stage, and you walk away with your MVP. You go then to your original investor and you've got way more upper hand. And so that's sort of the purpose and what we're working on. And we've partnered with Republic because they're mission-based, and they recognized, in my opinion, after meeting with, you know, even locally, there's some here at 1871 Veslo. We met with a lot of them. I felt like the combination of Republic's relationship, albeit limited and sort of distanced, with AngelList, it's being in New York and having ties to San Francisco, and it's want to be involved with mission-based only. They understood our need to keep the use this as a tool for diversity and for female founders to take advantage of it. It just seemed like a good partnership. And so we've partnered with them, and they give us all the resources possible. So with tonight's event, the CEO of Republic will be there. The advisors and stuff will also be there. And four out of the five companies on our stage are actually currently running equity crowdfunding campaigns, including two in Chicago, Ellison Eyewear, which is Aristotle Loomis, and they hit their minimum in 8 days. So they're already going to get their money. They've raised, I think, $80,000 or something like that. And the second one that launches today, literally launches today on stage, is a name everyone knows around Chicago, Desiree Vargas Wrigley, who is the founder of Give Forward. She sold Give Forward, which was a huge success, and she just launched Parachute Kids, and she will be announcing her equity crowdfunding campaign tonight on our stage as well.
That's awesome. Super excited to kind of hear how you're solving two problems, both from the access to capital as the founder, but getting people more than just stickers.
Yeah. I mean, I like stickers, but, money.
I prefer to have a $30,000 check.
Me too.
You can buy a lot of stickers with that.
No kidding.
So I know you've had Brian on, and you've talked to actually hundreds of founders, innovators, entrepreneurs across radio, TV, and podcast platforms. What makes an interesting conversation, and who makes a good guest?
Yeah, so I have three favorite types. I always say, like, I hate to say filler, because you always get like a couple people. It's like the glue guy in the baseball team. You know, they show up prepared. They know what they want to talk about. They talk about it and they move on. You don't have to think too hard. Everyone likes a nice little relaxing conversation. My other two favorite are the geniuses. There's only been a few of them. Two off the top, Emerson Sparks, Dose Media. Oh, I should say Emerson and MuggleNet as well, for those of you Potter fans out there. And Amanda Lanot, the CEO of Jellyvision, are two people that I sat in front of and literally, I mean, they were, Emerson was having five or six other conversations in his head during our interview. And Amanda is just the quickest, most quick-witted. I feel like she just knows everything. She's like, she can predict the future, I swear. And so those are my like two favorite types, because I'm just fascinated by like watching behind your eyes, watching your brain twist around. And then my absolute favorite, even more than the geniuses, are the freaks. You always get a handful of freaks. They come unannounced. They sit down. They look insane. They talk insane. And it's gold. Some of our biggest shows have been like, guys, I can't say their names because I just called them freaks. But there's been a couple shows that were massive hits. We didn't talk about anything. They came on and just were like a whirling dervish. It was just perfect.
So I'm a little nervous now hearing his answer, because I know I wasn't a genius and I think I probably wasn't a freak. So
you were a glue guy right in the middle. You're my third favorite.
So I'm the glue guy that holds it together. But
there's a bunch of other types that are not, you know, there's probably seven or eight different types of interviewers that are not good.
Yeah. Well, beyond guests and that, the other thing that I think is great about what you do with Technori specifically is, every month you're hearing people pitch their business. So you get kind of a firsthand look at that experience. So you just talked about what makes a good guest, but what makes a good pitch?
Yeah. So this is always a funny one. I got asked this question by Tom Sosnoff on Tasty Trade, and I totally like tried to dance around it because I didn't want to make people mad. There's a few things. Obviously, when we pick our companies, I want a company to be successful. So I want to pick something that's not ridiculous. Because it's important that you see companies when you come to visit us that have a legitimate shot of success. So number one, do I think it's viable? Number two, do I think that this is in a market that this is more than a dream shot? Are you going into a market that actually has viability, or is this something that like is going to take everything in the world to move it? Do you have to move things, or is the world moving and you're just going with it? And then the third thing, like it or not, we are an entertainment source. So if you're really, really, really dry, or you're on the borderline and I don't think that you're going to entertain the crowd, or people can't relate to you or your business, then I probably will put it on the back burner, maybe have you on the show and see if I can't pull it out of you first. So that's it. But when it comes to a great pitch with Square Planet, we train every single company that comes on stage. Every company that's ever been on our stage has had a 3-hour training session at Square Planet beforehand. We don't charge for it. It's mandatory, but we don't charge for it. Two things that I would say about that, and what those guys at Square Planet and Seth and myself and Dan Patak, who was previous to me at Technori helping prep, is I think that not only do we create great pitchers that can have a good show, and they've also gone on to raise a lot of money. I think it's because we focus on three main things, and I tell every single person who pitches, whether you're on our stage or you're at like a venture pitch thing, or you're talking to investors for the first time, start with why. Why is this important? Why are you doing this? What is the mission and why are you doing it? If you can't get people to feel for you right off the bat, you lose them. The second thing is, how are you going to do it? It's great, cool mission, but if you can't explain to me how you're going to do it, now you're wasting time. And the third thing is don't ever, and as a marketing guy, you know this, don't ever leave the room without asking for something. You're here, you've got them, you've got their attention, they feel for you. This is the best time in the world to ask them to help you. So why, how, and do is what I preach to every single one of them. And to every founder who's ever come on stage, I don't think there's been more than two that have not said, you know, part of their projections and their financials are included in their pitch, and they throw them out every time. Because if you're going to sign a deal with somebody, they're going to have the bean counter with them. So if I'm having a conversation with you on the street or on stage or wherever it might be, it's a waste of time, because those numbers are based on myths and dreams and pipe dreams and whatever. No one cares. Get to the mission, get to the next stage, and then tell me like how you're going to do it and what I can do to help you. And then if it works out and you have a meeting with your investors, you know, go ahead and give them the pitch deck then.
So for early stage companies, there are so many priorities competing for their attention. where does brand and marketing fit in to those priorities? How important is it for early stage companies?
I think it's number one. I think brand and marketing is probably the number one most important thing above all else for every company, but for startups more than any, and more now than ever, because here's the deal. The first thing that companies say when you ask that question, they're going to say it's money. It's got to be money. I'm living proof it's not. I didn't have $1 when I started my company. I used $8,000 that I saved away from my tuition money on a loan, on a student loan to go to school, that I just didn't spend on books because I don't read them. They're digital, not like I'm special. I read books that are just digital. So I didn't have to buy them. I used that and then just kept rolling it over. When it came to the podcast, I took a credit card out and threw $50K on it, still paying on it. You don't need to raise the capital. You need to be identifiable. You need to distinguish yourself. You need to separate yourself. You need to have something people can relate to and see an image. You only have a flash of someone's attention. So if you don't have a great brand that ties out to your mission, and I can't see it visually in the colors and the design of your logo and the strategy of your content, you got nothing. So you could have the most money in the world, and if it sucks, it sucks, you know? So I think the number one thing that people should focus on when they start a company is, you know, and I'm sure, again, Brian's the man to talk to about this, but, you know, what is the messaging behind my company? How do I relate to the end user? What my mission is, what my belief system is, what my sort of whole thing's about. A logo and name that is both catchy and meaningful and, again, ties out to the messaging. And then some sort of content strategy to stay pertinent. Because if you're not continually in front of people, whether it's a podcast or, and we're actually doing that now, we're creating podcasts for companies, whether it's a podcast or a blog or something meaningful and valuable, if you're not doing and creating something on a brand side of things, how are people going to find you?
Well, you joked earlier that you may have skipped the media part, but you clearly get the marketing part, as evidenced by how you grew Tomorrow's Business Today, all the exciting things you're doing at Technori. Scott Catoon, CEO of Technori, thanks for being on the Brand Lab series today. For all of you that want to see something really cool, come out to the JP Morgan Chase Theater tonight in the Loop for our January Technori showcase. And Scott, it's been a pleasure to have you on today.
Absolutely. You can go to technori.com to get your tickets.
All right.
I want to thank our listeners for joining us in the Brand Lab today, and to invite you back next Tuesday as we continue our journey of today's most innovative brands, as we learn how they empower employees, engage consumers, design products, and co-create experiences together.
To learn more about me or Technori, you can go to Facebook and Twitter at Technori or at Catoon at Twitter.
To listen to other Brand Lab Series podcast episodes, visit brandlabseries.com. Follow us on Twitter at Brand Lab Series. And if you have any questions or ideas for a future Brand Lab Series podcast, email us at info@brandlabseries.com.